Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Guy Geish of the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to Ignite Demand Generation on Blog Talk Radio. Every month, this innovative series delivers proven ideas, techniques, and examples of how you can deliver a measurable contribution to your company. The content for this series is provided by a wide array of nationally recognized experts, and each issue, whether through email series or Blog Talk Radio, provides you with practical insight you won't find anywhere else. For more information on Ignite Demand Generation, please visit our website at www.pedowitzgroup.com. More to come on that a little bit later. Well, I am very excited to introduce our guest today. It's Jim Dickey of CSO Insights. Now, not only is Jim a good friend, hold on a second, we're going to cut that, we're going to edit that out. 1 second, Jim.
Okay.
I am very excited to introduce our guest today, Jim Dickey of CSO Insights. Not only is Jim a good friend, and I have long been an admirer of his work, but I've also been a beneficiary of his work as a vice president of sales and marketing for numerous companies. And our topic today is, what does sales expect from marketing? But first, let me give you a little bit about Jim's background. Jim is managing partner of CSO Insights, a research firm that specializes in benchmarking how companies leverage, what else, people, process, and technology, all toward three things. How do you optimize the way they market to, sell to, and service to customers? Now, Jim has over 29 years of sales and marketing management experience with companies like IBM and Sterling Software, and he's also launched two very successful software companies. In addition to all of that, Jim's also a really busy guy. He's contributing editor for CRM Magazine, for CRM Guru, and also for the Harvard Business Review. He's also written numerous books, which I've read every one of them, and they're all great. He's author of The Chief Sales Officer's Guide to CRM, Insights into High-Tech Sales and Marketing, and co-author of a few books, my favorite being The Sales and Marketing Excellence Challenge. His best work and reason for our discussion today is Jim recently published his 14th edition of the Sales Performance Optimization Survey and Analysis. And there's three areas that we're going to explore based on Jim interviewing a lot of different executives, and he'll tell you more about that. We're going to explore what's happening between the alignment of sales and marketing. We're going to talk a little bit about what does sales expect from marketing besides closed deals. And we're also going to talk about what does the company expect from marketing. So, Jim, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me, Debbie.
You are so welcome. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. So, Jim, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about the survey, how it's structured, who is involved, and how long you've been doing it.
Okay. Well, we'll start with how long at the beginning. This is actually our 14th annual survey. We started the survey based on the fact that when I was running sales and marketing for the software companies I co-founded, I noticed before every board meeting that I was the only one who didn't have anybody to talk to. That my partner, Kevin, who was the CEO, could call Bain or McKinsey or the Young Presidents Club at Stanford. George, who was our CIO, could call Gartner, Forrester, or Yankee. Ed, who was our CFO, could call Coopers & Lybrand, Brendan Wilson, Sassini, our lawyers. And I go, you know, like, I've got sales and marketing. Who am I going to call? You know, Tony Robbins, you know, Zig Ziglar.
Exactly.
So what we started doing was saying when we sold the last company, my wife told me I was not doing a fourth startup. And so really went out and just started doing research on what is happening in sales and marketing and really kind of found that there were a lot of people like me that were, you know, had the sales and marketing mantle for running that part of the company who were saying, you know, I'd really love to know what's going on in this area, what are the challenges facing teams, but more importantly, what are we doing about it? And so we started our first study back in 1994. We had 150 participants. Those were mainly friends of mine who I called up in companies like Microsoft and Computer Associates, et cetera. But it's grown now to where we had 1,600 companies participate in the 2008 study. They were worldwide across multiple geographies, multiple industries. you know, everything from small companies on up to, you know, the Fortune 1. And so what we've really been doing is just kind of collecting, again, what are the challenges that are keeping our sales teams from being more effective? Why are those problems kind of existing? And they change all the time. You know, when we have a good economy, you know, there are fewer challenges when there are great economies. Right now, everybody's worried because the economy's slowing a little bit. So we're really kind of focused on that. And out of the work we did with sales, we really started doing more work on the marketing side of the house, too, saying, what can marketing do to support sales success? So we actually ran a separate target marketing effectiveness study all around, you know, what's marketing going to do to help pave the way for me to get, you know, people into stores or get appointments all the way through me actually getting closes.
Okay, that's great. And, again, I have used Jim's survey throughout the years and have found it to be an invaluable piece of research. I remember 4 years ago when I first had started into this whole area of demand generation as a VP of marketing, I actually took Jim's survey that year, went through every single section and said, what implication does this have for me and marketing? And it was a great help. So that's a little bit of the survey. And you can certainly go to Jim's website to find out more about the survey, and we'll give you the website information in just a few minutes. But tell us, based on the research that you guys did in 2008, what are the things that marketers should know, should be aware of from this study?
I think the real thing that jumped out at us was, you know, the number of companies that says, look, you know, we've got to change how we sell because our customers are changing how we buy or how they buy. And what was really drawn to us, we were interviewing VP of sales and marketing for a large plastics manufacturer, and he said the best thing that they ever did and the worst thing they ever did was create a customer intranet back in 1999, where they started making information available to their customers. And you'd say, well, that'd be a great thing. And he said, well, it was, except that's now grown to over 10,000 pages of product information. And what it's really done is changed the buying-selling dynamic. Back in 1999, the sell cycle and the buy cycle were almost always in alignment because either a sales rep came up and said, hey, I've got a new resin, do you want to take a look at it, and called the customers, or a customer was starting a new project and called the sales rep and said, hey, do you have anything new I can take a look at? And the reason that discussion had to happen was the sales rep had all the product information. Now that's not true. You know, that's available on my website, on my competitors' websites, on industry sites, on blog sites. So the buy cycle can start way before the sell cycle. And so when the sales rep does get involved, you know, it's not just, hey, tell me about my product, because they already know about it. So marketing's got to be in a position to support sales a whole different way. Yeah, it's great that they're running the websites. It's great that they're creating microsites and individual portals as part of the marketing things. But they've got to sit there and start passing on some of that intelligence they've gathered and also provide sales with a whole different level of information so that when I do engage a customer, you know, I'm able to have a value-add discussion versus a product discussion.
Jim, let me ask you this question around the reconciliation of how companies sell versus how their customers buy. In conversations with lots of marketers, I think marketers gravitate real easily toward the notion that the dynamic really has changed to how customers buy. But I don't always find that sales is as open to taking a look at that as a different process. So can you tell me a little bit more about how sales is welcoming actually taking a look at how customers buy?
I think what's really happening, and the way we kind of gauge the mental state, if you will, of a sales organization, is we sit there and say, do you guys do sell cycle reviews? You know, do you do like, you know, win-loss reviews for deals that, you know, you thought were going to close and they either did or they didn't? And they go, oh, yeah, we do those. And we say, great. So what do? Oh, we interview the sales rep and we talk to them about, you know, what they did and what was involved and all those. We really try to understand what happened. They say, great. How many times do you interview the customer? And there's like silence.
They say.
And they go, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, your sales rep's going to tell you about the sell cycle. Your customer will tell you about the buy cycle. They'll tell you who was involved from their side. They'll tell you what they thought of your message versus somebody else's message. They'll tell you the individual buying tactics they went through with each one of those vendors. And I said, you know, we've really got to realize the sell cycle is there to support the buy cycle. Buy cycle is not there to support the sell cycle. So I think a lot of the more innovative, you know, sales execs and salespeople have always known that I really understand, you know, I'm really here to help my customer. And so I think that's becoming the thing where people are realizing what I sell used to be my competitive edge. So, you know, if I had the best widget, I really didn't care about the buy cycle. I know somebody was going to buy my widget. But, you know, product development cycles have collapsed so much that I don't hear anybody today telling us that they've got a sustainable product edge anymore. So if it's not going to be what I sell, maybe it's going to become how I sell that differentiates us. And I think that requires, you know, sales organizations to be mindful of, okay, what's it look like from their point of view? And what do I need to do to support them getting educated on what's going on, being able to go and build a business case, being able to build consensus that we're the right choice? You know, this is all about us supporting the customer in terms of making the decision. I think that's a shift for some salespeople.
So let's ask the same question and ask it just specifically for marketers, because you can certainly see how things are moving downstream. And if you are a marketer in any kind of company today that is making living off of B2B, what implication does this notion of a buy cycle and understanding it have on how marketers deliver to an organization?
I think what we're really seeing is that, you know, in today's world, you know, if you go back to, you know, the world of NCR, you know, NCR is kind of viewed as the, you know, the father place of the B2B sales cycle. Is, you know, they had the cash register sales guys, and they'd go load a cash register into the trunk of the guy's car, and they'd say, don't come back until you've sold it.
Right.
So at that point in time, sales was really doing everything. They were going doing interest generation. They were going to do an education. You know, they were doing, you know, justification. You know, that's shifted today to really where sales is involved in part of the buy cycle support process. Marketing is involved in a lot of it. So I really think what marketing needs to do is sit down with sales and say, okay, let's map out all the steps in the buy cycle. Now that we've got all those things done, let's map out each step in the sell cycle. And I'm using the universal sell because it's, you know, what marketing does a lot of that is selling activities. And then let's decide who owns what steps and when do we do the handoff. And I'm just amazed how many companies haven't had that kind of discussion where they really sit down and say, okay, I own it to this point, and then I pass it to you under these conditions, or I maybe keep it and do a little incubation under those conditions. But, you know, just mapping everything out so everyone knows what's expected. And then marketing can, you know, focus on, okay, how do I optimize the parts of the process I own, and then how can I support sales in the parts of the process they own? Because marketing is really two things. There's MarCom, which is generating interest and creating awareness in the marketplace. But there's also product marketing, which is when I go out into the field, you know, what's the right sales message I take? When I send that person a follow-up letter, you know, what's the right verbiage that I want to put in there to show that I really understand their problem? When I'm putting together the proposal, you know, how do I have the strongest business case built? And all of those are types of things that product marketing also is involved. So I think it's this whole thing of we don't think twice about walking over to the VP of manufacturing and go debug the product. I think CEOs ought to be turning to VPs of sales and marketing and go debug the process. I want you to figure out the best way to go to market.
I think that's outstanding advice. So let me ask you this question, because I know you spend a lot of time trying to do research, and if this is in place, then is there an additional uplift in sales? So have you done any research on those companies that have the buy process and the sales process mapped out, who have defined who owns what steps, and have defined when something passes from marketing to sales? Have you done any research around what additional revenue uplift this might give them?
Well, actually, in the 2008 study, what we did was we took a look at, you know, how companies sell and how they market, and say, are there different types of ways that you could approach things? And we really took a look at this from two perspectives. One that was featured in Harvard Business Review was we've been for years kind of segmenting companies based on the process they use, from we're totally ad hoc and random, everybody does their own thing, to we're very structured, we measure the heck out of everything, and we're constantly looking to proactively make changes in how we sell and market. Then we also looked at it from what's the relationship I have with my customer, from I'm one of many approved vendors to I'm a trusted partner. And it's interesting when you talk about uplift on those things, for people that are just down at the vendor, approved vendor stage and have very random process, what we found was we called that kind of the sleepless nights category. They had 56% of their reps making quota versus the guys who had built good relationships with their customers, were constantly changing how they sold and market, as opposed to 56% of reps making quota, it was 69%. Now, you and I both been VPs of sales. We know 69% of my guys are making quota. I've got a lot better chance of making my numbers of VP of sales than if 56% of my guys are making number. But every single number was better. The percentage of overall plan achieved was higher, as you have more process and really understand these things. Win rates go up, and also sales force turnover goes down. People like working for a company that has its act together, that knows what it's doing. And so as opposed to a 32% turnover rate in the sleepless nights category, we have 23% turnover in these companies that are really together and really focused on the customer and what's the process look like. And that's a huge number. If you can reduce your turnover rate from, you know, 1% or 2%, you can probably play for all your sales effectiveness initiatives for the rest of your life based on the fact you won't have the loss of revenue from trying to ramp up a new rep.
So the message is process wins.
Well, I think it really does. It's this type of thing where people always talk about sales and they go, well, you know, but sales is an art. And I go, you know, I'm not buying that. You know, cooking is an art also. But there is a thing called the Culinary Institute of America. And all the best chefs go there and they learn the science of you know, cooking so they can apply their artistry to it later on. And I think that's where we've got to get this blend of bringing more science in there. Yes, you're going to go in there and you're going to have to be nimble on your feet. And marketing is going to have to be nimble and change in their messages. But there is some science. And the more that we start to recognize that and integrate that into what we do and have 100 guys doing the same thing, we're going to be more successful.
Absolutely. Jim, did your study include anything in the area of online behavior and being able to, as you were saying, the one plastics company that had all their product SKUs online, did you do any research specifically around how companies were using the internet or how access to online behavior changes how marketers approach their business as well as sales?
Actually, we did. We did it in part of the sales study and in the marketing study. And let me give it to you from the marketing perspective first. We've seen the amount of overall marketing budget spend put on lead generation going up as a percentage of the marketing budget. And the biggest increase in that spend has been spent on the web. So people looking back and saying, look, if more of my customers are going there, and by the way, you have the new generation of executives coming into this marketplace and the new division of professional workers, you know, these are guys who are, you know, texting each other in meetings. I mean, these are the younger kids. I had a joke where a friend of mine, a younger professional now, I mean, he's 25 years old, I would say, do you ever email anybody? He says, yeah, if I'm talking to somebody old like you.
That's,
I said,
so
breaking
funny.
My heart.
That's right.
You know, this is a whole, you know, internet-based generation. So we've got to start realizing that they're going to go to the internet first for information in a variety of ways. So they want to go to your websites. They want to go in. But, you know, when you go to your website, what are they doing? Where have they gone? What kind of information did they look at? And can I let the rep know that, hey, so-and-so from 3M was here again? You know, they were taking a look at what we were doing in this new product announcements. By the way, they were really, when they clicked on a bunch of screens related to the quality of the product. But, you know, rep behavior, I can start to, excuse me, customer behavior is something I can start to analyze, and I can start to pass that on. But also, this whole area of lead incubation, if somebody's interested, why can't I create a personal portal for them or send them out information on a regular basis and track, did they open it? You know, what did they look at to see if all of a sudden they've now got time? So I think we've got to start marketing the intelligence we can get from the web. Once we've got that intelligence, you know, we're seeing people use, you know, the web a lot of different ways. You know, webinars are becoming very successful. Podcasts like this, you know, where were those, you know, 5 years ago? But they're now becoming a way of communicating with customers. And just even things like, you know, taking, you know, WebEx or GoToMeeting and having reps have it so they could just do ad hoc meetings. You know, I pop up a web session, I bring in my customer, we start talking, they start showing me schematics, I get an engineer who may be in Europe to join our conversation. I mean, the web creates a whole new way of communicating, both in terms of marketing communicating, you know, information, but also sales communicating during the sales call and involving the right experts.
Absolutely. And again, there's so many different ways that the web is now being used. I always tell people you're only limited to your imagination because the information is there and how you create those online relationships really be what defines the B2B marketer today and I believe also moving into the future. Jim, let me ask you another question. I know that in past surveys that you have run from the Sales Performance Optimization Survey, the last couple of years, one of the number one things that VPs of sales were asking for were more leads. Where did that rank this year?
It was actually number one on their list of priorities for 2008. And I think what they're really struggling with is a lot of things. It's you know, when we took a look and we asked the question in the sales study, of the deals that closed, what percentage of those resulted from leads generating from marketing? And the number the last several years has been in the 30% range. Well, you know, there are other leads that come in. You know, I could get referrals. Somebody could call customer support. They could give me something else. But, you know, that still only accounts for 20% additional. So 50% right now of the leads that are turning into business are being generated by the sales reps themselves. And so they're really saying, you know, that's, you know, I'm glad you hit your number, but I hired you to sell. And is there a way that we can, you know, generate more opportunities so that the reps could go focus on more closes? And I think there's two aspects of this. You know, clearly, Debbie, as you brought up, there's the need for more leads. But what it really is a need for more opportunities. And here's the difference on that. One of the things we track in this study is what percentage of leads actually convert to a first discussion, you know, whether it's over the phone or a face-to-face meeting. And that number has been deteriorating for the last 4 years. And so it's not only can I get somebody to talk to, it's can I get somebody who will then agree to, you know, take it the next step farther. And I think that's, again, a challenge that marketing needs to be aware of is why is that dynamic happening? You know, we spend all the money, we get somebody to come to an event, we get somebody to go to the website, we get somebody to call an 800 number. But why isn't, you know, when the rep now becomes involved, why is that still deteriorating in its conversion rates? And I think it's, again, because we're not necessarily providing them with the right conversational dialogue statements in terms of saying, okay, here's why you should meet with me. Because face it, no exec today has spare time. So they're going to meet with you if they see a clear value that you provide them. And I think that's got to be something that marketing and sales work to ensure is happening.
So I'm assuming from that, Jim, you've got clients or people from the survey, when they talk about quality, when they talk about opportunities versus just raw leads, that the role of marketing is to nurture and bring those prospects further into the sales funnel prior to turning them over to sales.
Yeah, I think the biggest sin, if you will, that most of us have created, and I was guilty of this all the time in my companies too, is we didn't do this thing called lead incubation. You know, marketing said, my job is to generate leads. Sales said, my job is to follow up on qualified leads. And qualified was you've got time and you've got budget and you've got interest. But what about the guys who have budget and they have interest, but right now they don't have time? Those guys fell into the abyss and still do in a lot of companies. So we've got to handle this thing called lead incubation, which is you're a great fit. It's just you've got all these other things on your plate right now, and I've got to wait for a couple of those to get off your plate before you're going to be serious about taking a look at this. And we've talked to a company in Japan who took part in the study, and when they just focused on, okay, let's just nurture these people, they put together a specific program that said for the next 6 months, somebody who has interest and who has money but doesn't have time, we're going to take them through this program. They were able to convert another 30% of those leads into first meetings. And I think that's the thing that, you know, we've got to start figuring out is whose job is it? But once they do it, you know, when we figure that out, is that a marketing job or a sales job? Most times it's marketing. Then how do we go about doing that cost effectively?
And you're absolutely right. Lead incubation really is about, you know, when you reach out and touch a prospect or a client once, that's really not enough. You know, you're right. If they have the interest and they have the money and you know this is the right target account for you, then it's just a matter of time, and doing it via incubation, I think, is incredibly important. It's really no different from the sales cycle. You know, they're going to buy when they're absolutely ready to buy. Jim, let me ask you a higher level question. It's one that I get from a lot of the companies that I work with. What's happening, and we've kind of touched on it, but what's really happening between the alignment of sales and marketing? What does your study show?
Well, we're finding is a lot of companies, you know, say they want it. In fact, I think sales and marketing alignment was the number three priority from the sales perspective this year. It was the number two priority for marketing. So we're saying all the right words. It's just we're not necessarily doing it. What we're seeing, though, is in some companies, we're seeing what we're calling the chief customer officer. And so now all of a sudden it's somebody who says, okay, I've got sales and marketing and in some cases support. So I've got one person who can break ties. You know, in too many companies, what we've got is the sales silo. It's run by one executive. We have the marketing silo. It's run by another executive. And he or she don't necessarily, you know, report to the same person until you get to the CEO. And I think the CEO is the wrong person to be breaking ties between sales and marketing. So we are seeing more companies kind of adopt and say, look, just like we've taken all the back office functions and put them under the CFO, and all the information functions and put it under CIO. Why don't we put all of these sales and marketing functions under one person so that we have somebody ensuring that everybody's on the same page. The compensation plans are tied the same. The goals and objectives are tied the same. The strategies and tactics support each other. And I think that's something that, you know, still needs to come to a lot more companies.
Let me ask you this question about the role of a chief customer officer, because it sounds as though it's for existing customers, but it's also all the activities required to get a new customer.
Absolutely. It's sitting there and saying, you know, we are today dependent on, you know, finding more, winning more, and keeping more deals. And those deals then turn into customers. And really, I think, you know, the whole, you know, support side of this too is what I really want is customer satisfaction is not enough today, because I'm satisfied with the gas station I buy gas from, but I'll do an illegal U-turn at rush hour traffic if it's 3 cents cheaper across the street. So, you know, even loyalty's not there because I might outgrow the need. So really, customer advocacy is there where I'm not advocating for you in the marketplace. And I really think that, you know, we've got to start understanding that there's this bigger thing. It's not just marketing. It's not just sales. It's creating customer relationships that will, you know, stay with us, that if all of a sudden we're a little bit more expensive than the competition or we're behind in the feature count, you know, for a couple months, that they'll stick with us and that they won't just sit there and jump ship. And that's why I think we need to start looking at this thing from a bigger perspective if we're going to be successful long term.
And I also think that if you really begin by taking a look at what it takes to get, keep, and grow long-term profitable customer relationships, to your earlier point, it begins with putting yourself in the customer's shoes and taking a look at their buy cycle, and then you figure everything out from there across the life cycle. Jim, let me ask you this question, and we had talked a little bit about this in the pre-brief for our show. What does sales expect from marketing?
Well, I think what sales would like is they would like for marketing come and say, hey, yeah, I got one over here. You know, we've done they came to the website, we've educated them, we found all the other people who are going to be involved in the decision, we've also educated them, we even did an online demo for them, they've already seen the customer testimonials online, and they're ready to sign the contract.
Mm-hmm. Just ready to go.
Ready to go. So, I mean, that's what we'd all like. I think this gets back again to, you know, sales wants to know, what are you going to do for me and what aren't you going to do for me? When are you going to do it? You know, what's going to happen? So the whole thing of just communications is I just want you help me set the right level of expectations for what I can get from you, what I can't. And just it drives me nuts when all of a sudden there are all these marketing campaigns like, hi, we're doing a 10-city, tour where we're going to be doing seminars in your town, and the reps don't even find out about it. So I think the number one thing is just communications on let's agree on who owns church and who owns state. And, you know, also when I give you feedback, you know, can you tell me what happened to it? You know, I think there needs to be feedback on both sides where marketing says, I sent you a lead. What was the disposition? If it didn't close, why not? But also sales is going to say, hey, I tried this message. It didn't work. Here's why it didn't work. They need to know, so what are you doing to address it? You know, how are you going to change, you know, either the sales collaterals or the ads or whatever, so that we get, you know, we debug this process. Because I think the key thing about sales is it doesn't stay stable. You know, customers change how they buy all the time. You know, if there's an economic downturn, it's going to get tougher for companies to get things approved. So they're going to change their buying cycle. If all of a sudden there's, you know, changes in number regulations like Sarbanes-Oxley, well, I tell you, CFOs changed how they bought. So I think that we've got to realize that we've got to constantly be adapting to changes in the ecosystems in our marketplaces. And I think that's the communications between sales and marketing has really got to be there to support that.
One question that I get asked, or I get asked to help with quite a bit, is when the senior management team, the CEO, and the board all of a sudden is asking marketing a completely different set of questions that they've never been asked before. A lot of it has to do around the question, tell us what contribution you're making to the company. It could be contribution to revenue. It could be contribution to pipeline. You know, people use different phrases for it, but they now have a focus on, I know what everybody else gives me in the company. What is marketing giving me in the company? Did the survey cover anything like that?
The survey didn't, but we did some individual benchmark reviews for companies, and I'll share with you a story without naming the name of the company. Basically, it was an airline firm, And when we talked to him, we were in a meeting where the VP of marketing was walking in, and they were saying, okay, we've got to take a look at budget cuts. And the VP of sales sits there and says, I need an extra $2 million because I want to go out and hire 15 new sales reps. Now, if I hire these 15 new sales reps, here's the territories I put them in. Based on what we've seen over the history, here's the ramp up and how fast they'd start generating revenues. And here's what the impact would be on quarterly revenues and profits for Q3, Q4, and Q1 of next year. So got pie charts, got bar graphs, got everything. And the CFO goes, well, where do you expect the $2 million to come from? And he looks right across the table at the VP of marketing and goes, I want us to stop doing ads for the rest of the year. Because he's got a $2 million advertising budget, and who doesn't know that our company makes jets? Mm-hmm. And the VP of marketing is just totally blindsided by this conversation. He's going, wait a minute, we can't go dark. He says, why? Show me a chart that says if we go dark, we're not going to, it's going to impact revenues. I can show you charts and what happens if I have that $2 million and I got more feet on the street. Where are your charts? And I think you're getting back to your point. Yep, you make a point, Debbie. They need to start saying, here's what the return on marketing is.
Have you seen examples of that?
Yeah, we have. We've seen people going back and saying, okay, let's go back through and start doing analysis on what percentage of the people we send contacts to actually respond to something. Of those, how many progress further down the sales cycle? And not just how many close now, but how many close like maybe within the next year. So it's this integration of marketing CRM systems and sales CRM systems, and plus now the advances in sales analytics, to sit there and say, okay, let's go analyze all this information. For years we told marketing people and sales people, put information into CRM. Well, it's about time we start mining it now, because we work with one company back in Minneapolis. They're able to go back through the sales data and say, here's what a perfect prospect looks like. For the products we're selling today, when nursing is the economic buyer, our win rate's 85%. When purchasing is the buyer, it's 20%. Okay, marketing, go target the message more towards nursing. We need to get them involved in the process. By the way, here's the types of price points that we're seeing. So go for companies that have, this much revenue. So they're providing feedback into marketing on go find me prospects who look like this. Because if we find these, not all prospects are created equal. There's some things, attributes about them, could be geography, could be company size, could be the problem they're trying to solve, that says they're going to be much more prone to buy my product than others. And so we've got to start getting this closed-loop communication system going back. And if marketing is able to get that, they're going to be able to say, here's my return on investment. We did this seminar series, we did this web direct mail event, and here's the revenues that were generated initially 6 months after the thing and 12 months after the thing. Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we're seeing. People, marketers, have to take a results orientation, and it's all about the impact on revenue. So one last question for you, Jim. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to our listeners? They are VPs of marketing, directors of marketing, responsible for B2B marketing. What one piece of advice would you give them based on the 2008 survey?
Steal shamelessly.
What does that mean exactly?
What it means is I think that there's a lot of great ideas out there. That one of the things that we've found is as soon as people take the survey, we know who's doing good things and who's doing bad things. When people have said, hey, I went from generating 1.5 leads per call center rep per day to 7, we call them up. So I think what we've really found is we started segmenting the data now so we actually produce supplements that are saying, okay, here's what's going on just in software companies. Here's what's going on in the banking industry. Here's what's going on in professional services, high tech. So I think understanding what's going on in your markets is a really key thing, but also understanding what's going on in other markets. If the banking industry, for example, is doing a much better job than they've ever done in terms of creating, interest, doing via web campaigns. So I think that, for example, if you're a customer of Cisco, you're buying routers from them, it behooves you to talk to their sales reps and say, what's Cisco doing in the area of marketing? Because they're doing some really innovative things. If you're buying property and casualty insurance from Aon, for example, they've implemented a project now that's got up to 90% forecast accuracy. So, saying, could you share with us what you're doing on that? If you're using FedEx, they've been doing really innovative things around the web. So figure out who are the people in my ecosystem who have a vested interest in us being successful and go talk to them and say, you know, we're a vendor of yours or a supplier of yours. Can we buy your things? Can you help us be successful so we can sell more, so we can buy more of your things? And I think just getting ideas from other, you know, companies, even outside your industry, who are maybe 3, 6, 9, 12 months ahead of you in solving your problem is a great way of getting a ton of free consulting.
And I think that's absolutely great advice, because we do find lots of great practices that people are putting into place right now. It certainly has come a long way. I mean, the very first time I began in this whole area of demand generation was 4 years ago, and it was a desert of best practices. So many people have had so much success over the last 4 to 5 years. There is a lot of great things that you can share or steal shamelessly from other folks. And, Jim, I know that tell us where we can find the survey. And also, I'm also interested in you giving the audience a little bit more information around the supplements that you're doing, because I think that is very specific.
Yeah, our website is csoinsights.com. If you go there, you'll see people can buy individual studies from us. So there's the sales study, there's the call center study, there's the marketing study. Interesting, what we try to do with each one of the studies is say, there's a lot of information in here. So in addition to the study, when you buy this study from us, you also get a half-hour conference call debriefing with one of our partners on the phone. So you could say, here's the specific things that are resonating for us. Do you know any best practices out there? So we really try to provide a little bit of liveware along with the research data. But also what we found the last couple of years is people really want to dive down into, you know, this is great, but I'm a smaller company. So what are the challenges of companies that are 25 million or less revenues? Or I'm the GE of the world or the 3M of the world. What are the challenges and opportunities of billion-dollar plus companies? So again, we can go through based on needs and say, let's segment the data based on geography, based on company size, based on industry. So we really give you a, you know, definitive thing of here's how you're stacking up against your peers. And I think that's important information for sales and marketers to have, so they can go to the board and say, here's where we're outperforming our peers, here's where we're underperforming, here's where we're neutral. But then, you know, the VP of sales, you know, VP of marketing is going to say, great, you bought some time, but what are you going to do about those things? And so, again, what we do as a subscription service is that after people have said, here are the issues we want to work on, they can just call us up and say, do you know anybody who's doing a really good job of compensating U.S. reps and international reps calling on the same global account? So we can just put them in touch with their peer groups, and again, where they could get that kind of exchange of ideas and free advice going back and forth.
And I really encourage everyone to visit Jim's website and take a look at the types of data and the surveys and the results. Again, I've been a practitioner, and I have used Jim's reports for the last 4 years. And whether it's the sales effectiveness study or whether it's the marketing study, it is invaluable information. Every marketer that's in the area of demand generation is an early adopter. These are still very new days in this category. And so having access to practical information, like the information that Jim provides in his reports, is really invaluable to you. And I can promise you, if you get the report, practical insights that you will gain and how you'll have a better understanding of how to work with sales will really help you be successful in demand generation. Well, Jim, thank you so much for your time today. We really enjoyed the interview. We will have a link on our website, pedowitzgroup.com. We'll link you over to Jim's website as well. And again, we just thank you for your time, and hopefully this was a big help to those marketers who are now have the responsibility of demand generation. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks a lot, Debbie.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.